Welcome to That 80s Show, and Dory, welcome to 2024 with your new computer as we all rejoice upon the hilltops of technology.
And I mean, look at how far technology has come since the 80s. It's actually crazy. You know, sometimes I think back. Sometimes.
Well, I'm all for new technology. And I'm all for old technology. I appreciate old technology. There's been a bit of a revival of people. Have you heard about these, like, they call them barcades, where it's bars. Like bars, but they're full of arcade games from our youth. And people like play Street Fighter and Super Mario Brothers on consoles. But it's an adult bar, right? But I mean, I really love your dedication to have stuck with the 1980s era Apple Macintosh for all these years, your Commodore 64, but I think it's good and it makes the show more pleasurable, more enjoyable, and makes editing easier for me, and that's really all I care about.
makes it more mobile and portable. I mean, I've had to have, like, be stuck at this huge thing on the desk, you know?
Yes, the albatross around our next. So how are you, Dory, in this week of the 80s? We got some movies coming up. You are very excited. You called your movie a doozy.
It's a doozy. And I only discovered it, like, literally this morning.
That is up to the minute, That 80s Show. I want to go back a few weeks where you recommended a movie. If this is the first time listening to That 80s Show, what we do every week is we go back to the 1980s and remember movies, TV shows, and other things of the time or based on the time. And a few weeks back, Dory recommended the movie Lost Boys. Okay, vampire.
I did. Finally recommended it. Finally.
Well, Dory, did you actually do that for any strategic reason, or it was just a happy circumstance?
It was just a happy circumstance. I decided that I wanted to rewatch it because I didn't remember it very well. Hadn't seen it since the 80s and was expecting to hate it and turned up loving it. So I
Because
I thought it needs to be spoken about. Yes.
The Lost Boys has been a lot in my feeds because they've actually done a 4K restoration as a 35th anniversary release of the movie. So, you know, you can claim that. That's why you recommended The Lost Boys. So claim
Or they did it because we spoke about it.
In 2 weeks. They fully 4K restored a movie in 2 weeks. So that's a good move. On a similar note, I haven't seen it on the Netflix in South Africa, but we know we got a lot of listeners in America. The Netflix there, they're doing something where they're taking 40 movies from 1984 for their 40th anniversary. And that's, I mean, Flashdance is, Flashdance, Footloose is in there.
They have to do that here. They have to. Because that is the one thing that I hate about Netflix, is there's nothing 80s to watch on it.
So I have seen a lot more 80s movies on Netflix than normal. So not like realizing, oh, there's a lot. Exactly, because there's never 80s stuff. But back to the Lost Boys. So what they've been doing is found an article in the Guardian talking about how we made the Lost Boys in the words of some of the key people from the Lost Boys. So I went through some of it, of course, for your benefit. And I picked out the piece from your, I think, a newly discovered crush, Jason Patrick.
Indeed. A retrospectively discovered crush with the longer hair, because I knew who Jason Patrick was, but I didn't. I always thought of him as the guy from Speed 2.
That's it. Now, what you didn't discuss is obviously there are vampires. Kiefer Sutherland is one of the vampires. Let me give you some highlights of what Jason Patrick had to say about the Lost Boys. So he played the role of Michael. Michael was the main character, right?
Corey Haim was the main character, with Michael a very, very close second.
Joel Schumacher, the director, chased down Jason Patrick for years. He kept turning him down because he said, I didn't want to be in a vampire film, right? And eventually said to him, listen, you're going to love this because it's kind of horror, comedy, and I promise you, you get a lot of creative control. And Jason Patrick was like, listen, I will do this movie as long as I don't have to wear stupid makeup, teeth, and fly around. If you can guarantee me we do that, then I'm in. Guess what?
And that's exactly what they did in the movie. Make up teeth and fly around.
Right. But he's in it now. He's in it. And who at that point is going to say no to Joel Schumacher?
I mean, Kiefer Sutherland probably had to have more makeup.
He also talks about how they shot it in Santa Cruz. Now, when we think of Santa Cruz in the 80s, we're thinking of skateboards. There was like skateboard counterculture was. We all had stickers, yeah. Santa Cruz stickers was a skate brand. But Santa Cruz was like an absolute drug-ridden, despotic, just pre-post, during apocalyptic place in the 80s. And they were like, it just is like, it was one of those things when you're walking around, you're like shitting yourself because you go, it's great being here, but like, I can't tell who is an extra and who is actually just wandering around in a drugged haze in Santa Cruz. Yeah. He says over it, Corey Haim played his brother, right?
Yes.
So of the Coreys, Corey Haim played his brother. He says they actually developed a very close brotherly bond during the movie. So just automatically, they just picked up, they just had this brotherly thing towards each other. Which he said was a really nice, benefit of the movie. And he goes on to say that The Lost Boys is actually like the Wizard of Oz of its time, in that it's just a timeless classic and it resonates with all audiences because it showcases teen alienation so well. Good movie, great Jason movie. Patrick, years later.
Great movie.
Years and later. I mean,
if you want to actually, it's interesting because Jamie Gertz being in The Lost Boys and Less Than Zero, Less Than Zero was also about teen alienation in California, funnily enough.
So he actually mentions Jamie Gertz of saying there was someone else that wanted a more California blonde surfer girl for that role. And he had worked with Jamie Gertz on something else. And he said, you know what, bring her in because she's going to give you that like really cool girl vibe, but there's something really dark and mysterious about her. And just you know, audition her. And they're like, right, you got it. So it's okay. We'll get you your leading lady. You're still wearing vampire makeup and flying around. So it's not going away.
Vampire I honestly movie. Think a blonde vampire lady for Lost Boys wouldn't have worked for me.
She would have been that totally useless 80s airhead stereotype. All works out. The Wizard of Oz of its time. And you can watch it now fully restored in 4K, probably thanks to us. So
of course, it was totally us.
Pleasure.
It was.
It's a pleasure.
I'm claiming it.
It's a pleasure. In my movie recommendation a few weeks back, or last week actually, I fully intended to talk about Whoopi Goldberg. Got another Whoopi Goldberg movie this week. Fully intended to talk about her. But Bobcat Goldthwait showed up and I was like, I'm done.
Yep.
I can't do anymore. So it got me wondering because I said to you, well, Bobcat Goldthwait, he's like out there, he's calling out Hollywood right now. And he said, oh, I haven't kept up with what the Police Academy guys are doing. And I was like, okay, well, let me do that as a public service to you and go back and look at what the Police Academy guys are doing. Now, I've left out Kim Cattrall because, you know, we've seen her in all the Sex and the City. She's a big star. She's quite in our vision. She's always there. She's always around doing something. So I've left her out. Yeah.
Dude, when you say Police Academy, I do not think Kim Cattrall.
Well, I do, you see. So I do. So that's just me.
All right.
If I haven't brought up anybody, they're dead. Because so what have they been up to in the past few years? Being dead. Hightower passed away. The guy who was remember the guy who loved guns? What was his name? Feinberg, him. He passed away. The big three. I'll tell you about the big three are still with us. So a guy, your friend and mine, we met him a few years ago. He gave us a lunch bar. Michael Winslow.
you speak as if I was there. I wasn't there.
Were you not there?
No.
Oh my god! So a couple of years ago, Michael Winslow played Lavelle Jones from Police Academy. He's the guy who made all the noises. The guy that we all irritate. Thanks to our parents hate Police Academy. Thanks to him, because now suddenly we all thought we had the same skill as him.
The same skill, exactly.
Yeah. He gets brought out to South Africa a few years ago to star in a TV advert for a candy bar. It's called a lunch bar.
Right.
And he was at the radio station we worked at, and I had to go meet him, get a nice photo with him. He gives me a lunch bar, of course. I said, what do you think of my skills? Beep, 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 beep. He's like, very polite. He told me to fuck off. He calls himself a voice instrumentalist because he uses his voice as an instrument. not only was in Police Academy, he was in Gremlins, which I don't remember. And I do remember him in Spaceballs, right? Have you ever heard his story?
No.
Here he is. He's kind of like this big star of the 80s. I think he was the only one in all seven Police Academy movies, right? So massive star. Everyone knows him in Gremlins, in Spaceballs. Just like, wow, an 80s guy, you know? Height of this. Now, in the 90s, going to make my next move. 1993, his wife passes away. And sure. He's now faced with, he's got two young kids. And he's like, I'm out. I got to look after my kids. I can't be doing this crazy Hollywood thing. I've had my success. My family comes first. And he actually stepped out the limelight to look after his kids. Rick Moranis did the same. So he'd do a commercial every now and again, do little things like maybe a Comic-Con, but kind of like not mainstream, nothing that's going to take him away from being a good dad. So A couple of years ago, his son eventually prompts him and he goes, listen, Dad, you know what? Like, you left at the heart of your fame. People still love you. Like, you're still this iconic character of the
legendary.
80s.
Legendary. Exactly.
Really? He says, why didn't you go on America's Got Talent? To tell everyone you're back. Right?
Okay.
So that's what he does. He went on America's Got Talent. Now, the cynic in me knows that a lot of America's Got Talent is set up. So probably an agent of an agent said, get him a spot. But he goes on America's Got Talent, does like this whole routine, and it kind of launches him into this new career he's got as this touring stand-up one-man show doing his sound effects. So that's what he's been up to the past few years. Still like pretty low-key. You know, listen, you're getting that Police Academy appearance. You're still getting those royalties. I mean,
so on America's Got Talent, did he do that? Like what we know him for?
He was in America's Got Talent, and he didn't go to like multiple rounds and win the thing. It was just kind of like this
PR exercise, right?
To PR-y go,
hey,
thing.
Remember me? Yeah.
Yeah. Those of us in the game, like we kind of know. There is video. I will post it up. I will post it up. That 80 Show SA Facebook page. I will. I told you about Bobcat Goldthwait. He's got a new comedy show out called Soldier for Christ. What I did find is that story. This is a weird story. We go to this autumn of 1993 and Bobcat Goldthwait opened for Nirvana. Okay.
What?
So Kurt Cobain loved him. Kurt Cobain's, I love this guy. This guy's the best. You're our opening act. You can open for us before we perform. So he went through a little stage where he was opening for Nirvana. How wild is that?
I can tell you now, that is the craziest thing that I learned on today's show. Imagine you're in the audience and you don't know that this is going to happen. I wonder how he was received. Some people might have actually not been happy. I think most people would have been happy, right?
I mean, this was 1993, so Nirvana were like this was the height of their fame. Because like Kurt Cobain died in 94, I think. They were massive at this stage. Exactly. So you go, oh, Nirvana, and they're definitely going to have like some really cool band playing before them. Oh, what's the screaming guy from Police Academy doing here? I'm going for that.
I think people would have been quite confused, actually, more than anything else.
And I think it works perfectly. I was really hoping that they'd get him to like appear on a guest on Smells Like Teen Spirit. I think that would be
that would have been so funny.
Then it brings us to Mahoney.
Your man.
So he stayed around. I mean, he became breakout star, Police Academy, Cocoon.
Three men and a baby, little lady.
Men and all of them, three men and Tom Selleck's mustache. That's what they should have done. Because you ever hear that rumor about the ghost that is in one of the scenes of Three Men and a Baby?
Yes.
Have you heard that story? So it's an urban myth. That in Three Men and a Baby, you see the ghost of like a Victorian era boy in the window. Yeah. And for years and years, it's been debated. And eventually, they're just like, it's not a ghost, you idiots. Ted Danson's character was an actor and it was a cardboard cutout of him. Fucking ghost.
Which may or may not be the truth. That might have just been damage control. We don't know.
Hey, listen, I mean, are we in the Matrix here about big ghost conspiracies? Yeah. Are we in the pocket of big poltergeist? I don't know. Okay. But this is what people are saying.
This is just your way of bringing it back to Whoopi Goldberg because you're talking about ghosts.
See what I'm doing here? This is all related.
Yeah.
So Steve Gutzman, they should have made a spin-off. Tom Selleck's character dies. they remove his mustache and cryogenically freeze it. Okay. For maybe one day they can use it to make DNA and clone him. And then they should have called it Two Men and Tom Selleck's Mustache. Not catchy. Not a catchy title.
No, I'm sorry. That's
intriguing concept.
Stupid. No, I don't.
Intriguing nope. concept.
No.
It's very intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
Just admit it. Just think about it.
No. It's terrible. It's a terrible idea.
Let it stew. Okay. Not worse than Bobcat Goldthwait's movie. I'm going to tell you that. So, Steve Guttenberg, we know him, does the movies. He's in the Goldbergs. I think he comes up as a science teacher in the Goldberg. You see him around. He's still there.
Yeah.
And like this article says, you think that, with all of this, when he does his memoir, it's going to be like about, being this comedy hunk in Hollywood, acting in all these iconic movies. And he releases a memoir called The Guttenberg Bible. Okay.
Which he wrote in.
It's old. It's done in 2012. That's what he did. Okay. But now he's adapted it into a one-man stage show. Okay. Where he goes around what it's about. It's about his journey through the Jewish faith.
Okay.
Okay. The show
It's a clever title. It's a clever title. It's a pun. It's okay. I'll keep
it. It works, right? Listen to this. I mean, we're going Bobcat Goldthwait used to open for Nirvana. Take a listen to this. The show features four actors playing 90 different characters, okay? Including Alan Carr and Robert Evans, who are movie producers, Michael Bell, a voiceover artist, Paul Reiser, Merv Griffin, and Kevin Bacon. Okay. It covers his life from 17 when he snuck into the Paramount Pictures lot right through to his late 20s and his like superstardom. That's it. That's what he's doing.
But wow, that's giving you some nice Kevin Bacon links there, hey?
That's what your three favorite characters from the Police Academy are doing.
Do you watch Police Academy like now and still find it hilarious?
Is this a leading question?
No, I'm genuinely asking because I think if I had to watch it now, I wouldn't find it as funny as I did back then.
Every now and again, they're on and I will put it on. Just like background stuff, I still find it very funny. Especially the Police Academy high watermark was Citizens on Patrol. I think it was Police Academy 2. Okay. Love that one.
That was great.
Who can hate a running gag about the Blue Oyster Bar? Let's go into your movie recommendation.
Calling it a movie is a stretch, but this is a new format that we have never spoken about. This is something that I didn't even know. If I had known of this thing's existence in the 80s, I would have watched the shit out of it. I struggled to get through it once this morning, but it's one of those, oh my God, it's so bad, it's great kind of things. Let me tell you what happened. I went down a rabbit hole that I was not expecting with this. And boy, did I find gold in this rabbit hole. Paolo, do you remember the music video for Heartbeat by Don Johnson? I don't know if you remember it, if it rings a bell at all.
I watch it at least once a month. So Great saxophone. Yeah,
but he's like this videographer guy and he's like walking around what looks like New York City and he's having these flashbacks to stuff that makes absolutely no sense. And then he's singing on this really cool like stage thing, which is like made of light. And he's trying to see if he can see that he sees this girl in the crowd. Anyway, the video itself makes absolutely no sense, but I probably watched it thousands of times in the 80s because I was, and still am to a degree, madly in love with Don Johnson.
But it's a very jarring video to watch because you're going like, why is Don Johnson in this city? Why is he dressed warmly? I mean, where is his linen suit? He's
not dressed warmly. He's actually warmer. Dressed like a bit of a soldier.
Yes. So warmer than Miami. So it's like a very jarring video just from that point of view. It's like when you see your teacher, when you see his teacher like out of school.
Well, here's what I discovered today. There is a music video for Heartbeat, the song, off the album, which I also listened to death, even though, let's be honest, he's not a great singer. In fact, I'll go as far as to say he's not a great actor. But it doesn't matter because Miami Vice was classic and he was beautiful. And I still think he's beautiful. He's aged very well. And Don Johnson was just like a huge part of my teenage years. I discovered that there is a 1 hour and 5 minute long movie in very big inverted commas called Heartbeat, which is all the songs from his album put into a story in big inverted commas, which is really just one long music video because there's not a single word of dialogue in the entire thing. It's just song after song after song from the album, but it tells a story which actually, when you've watched the whole thing, Heartbeat, the music video, makes perfect sense because Heartbeat, the music video, is a summary of this hour-long story.
So Dory, can I read the synopsis? Because I
please
found
do.
It.
Good, please do. I was going to, but please do the honors. Do the honors.
It's a surrealistic journey into the experiences and reflections of a documentary filmmaker as he evaluates the people and places that have made up his life. Alternatively, it's a 65-minute feature made up of songs from Don Johnson's record of the same name. So it depends. Who are you?
That's literally what it is.
Why is Willie Nelson in it?
Because on one of the songs, one of the songs on his album is a duet with Willie Nelson. And so I don't know if it was an existing music video because that part of the movie has got nothing to do with the rest of the movie. It literally just comes up and he's singing a song with Willie Nelson.
I mean,
it's insane. It's also like
Frank Zappa's kids are in it. Yes.
Laurie Singer from Fame. It plays his wife, the filmmaker's wife. She's throughout the things on various songs. She's there. They have a child or two. It's unclear. At one point, she's holding one child. At some point, there's two children. It's all very unclear. These things don't matter. What matters is that it's the stupidest story ever made into an hour-long music video, which, as I said, I would have watched the shit out of in the 80s because, look, he looks amazing. He looks amazing through the whole thing. Terrible acting, intense stares. Like, in a nutshell, let me give you the nutshell. Also, Giancarlo Esposito is a very big part of the story. And he is in the music video for Heartbeat, but like there's no context of that music video. So you're like, what's going on? Who is he? What's the deal? If you watch the hour-long thing, the whole story is revealed. And I have to say, it's a bit moving. It's a little bit sad. It like makes me tear up a little bit and choke up a little bit.
This is outrageous. This is why I wish a Bobcat Goldthwait opening for Nirvana a video existed. This is what this should be.
It's just you have to watch it. You have to watch the whole thing.
Of the reviews here, okay, about it.
Yes.
It's 65 minutes of the most inexplicably hilarious vanity project set to emotionally vacant 80s pop ballads, courtesy of Don Johnson. It would take as long for me to list everything great about this as it would to watch it. So I guess I'd have to single out his 2001 meets Quantum Leap Purgatorial Dreamscape as the greatest thing.
Yes! That is such a good description of it. That is a perfect description of it. Oh my God.
Someone else says, this is something a person puts on in the background of a party because they think it'll be funny. But within 10 minutes, every single person is huddled around the TV with their jaws on the floor.
Exactly.
And a final review. It's an impressive and audacious flex from mid-80s Don Johnson. Bravo, sir.
It looks like he just got a bunch of his friends together because a lot of the people in it were also in episodes of Miami Vice. So I think these were people.
Luis Guzman. Luis Guzman's one of them. David Carradine's in it.
Like, but that part's so random. I can't even tell you. It's possible David Carradine, that part was filmed elsewhere and just put in an edit. There's no interaction between the two of them.
Find it on YouTube, put it on at your next party, because it's going to be funny. And then prepare for your party to move to the lounge as everybody goes, what the fuck are we watching? Let me bring my movie to the party and let's see, right?
We're ready.
So we've been doing this Whoopi Goldberg thing. I think we're done with Whoopi Goldberg now. This is the last one. We're done now. But this is the weirdest one. So actually, we're still in the realm of weird movies here, right? So we spoke about Jumping Jack Flash, probably your best movie. Burglar, pretty good, pretty clever. This movie, The Telephone, I got a feeling you might like it, okay? I'm going to tell you how this movie ends because you have to hear it because it's very weird. Whoopi Goldberg, she's an actress. Down on her luck, she picks up phone, starts talking, right? She's a very lonely woman. She only has a pet owl and a goldfish, right? That's her interaction.
Pet owl?
A pet owl. She's got an owl.
What is she, Harry Potter?
That's what I'm saying, okay?
Okay.
She's – the whole movie is about her having different conversations on the phone. It's pretty much just her. She's doing voices. She's putting on accents. She's crank calling people. She's just always on the phone. Every now and again, you hear somebody say, shut up, keep it down, keep it down. But the action never moves from her shitty little apartment, her owl and her goldfish, and Whoopi Goldberg just doing these performances, right? Just full-on tour de force Whoopi Goldberg. She's then phoning her agent and, you know. Her ex-agent then shows up, says to her, she says, oh, you're terrible. You never booked me. And she says, look, I never booked you because you're actually very difficult to work with, right? That's why no one ever booked you, right?
Okay.
Get the fuck out of here. Get out of my house. Going to listen to my answering messages, you know, my answering machine messages, right?
Right.
Carries on urine, carries on messages. People, hey, shut up. Eventually, someone knocks on the door. Guy comes in, and he's like, "I'm here to take your phone because you haven't paid your phone bill."
A landline, obviously.
This is now over an hour into watching Whoopi Goldberg do wild shit, having conversations. I'm here to take your phone, right? She attacks the guy, stabs him, and when she picks up the phone to phone 911 to report it, the phone's dead. So this whole movie, she's been having conversations with herself and imaginary characters. And you're left to go, okay, she's mentally not well. She's schizophrenic, whatever you want to call it, right? Is she having a hallucination? Is it deeper than that? Is she even in her apartment? Is she perhaps in a, you know, locked in a room by herself?
In a padded room, exactly.
Yes. And then the movie ends. And that's the movie, The Telephone. Whoopi Goldberg talking on a phone.
I've definitely never seen it. Oh my God.
For over an hour.
It sounds like it was too weird for South Africa.
When they screened this movie in America, okay?
Yeah.
People were shouting, I want my money back, and I hope the film tears. So, you know, they used to play a physical film. Like people were walking out demanding their money back over this bullshit movie, right? Whoopi Goldberg won the Raspberry for Worst Actress. And, you know, I love a Raspberry Award winner.
Yes.
People have subsequently said this is the movie that probably killed her career. Thank God for Sister Act and Ghost later on. But for a few years, people went, we're not touching you. Like, that was such a bomb.
You know, I really want to watch it now. It sounds like my kind of weird, arty movie.
You got to love a movie where Whoopi Goldberg tried to sue the producers to stop it from being released.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So we're going to end off this week's show. I've been playing it for a few weeks. From pastfactory.com, guess the 80s song by the first line. We haven't got any wrong. And Dori, I'm going to make a bet now. We will get none wrong. Even if we get it wrong, we're re-recording it.
Wait, we're only like halfway through, right?
We're 60%. How it works is that it's a quiz. You got to guess an 80s song by the first line. You're given, they're very generous because it's multiple choice and all the multiple choices are from the same artist. Plus they give you a photo of the artist. So it helps you along. This one are two ladies. Okay.
Okay.
Now you got to go.
Yeah.
Two lady band.
Well, it's either the Indigo Girls or Heart or.
Okay. All right. You're in the right ballpark. The lyric is, I hear the ticking of the clock.
Dude.
Okay. The options are, What About Love, Barracuda, these dreams or alone? You said heart. It is heart.
It is heart. Shit. Now I've got to actually be 100% sure on this because I've got to have to go through the words. I'm lying here. The room's pitch dark. Da, 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 da. Alone. It's alone.
It is alone. Okay. Van Halen. The options are Jump, Panama, Love Walks In, Hot for Teacher. Opening line is, I get up and nothing gets me down.
Really?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Let the listeners have a chance. Let the listeners have a chance. A Van Halen song, I get up and nothing gets me down. The options are Panama, Jump, Hot for Teacher, or Love Walks In. It is Jump.
Of course it's Jump.
Jump for your love.
What
jump
else could it be?
Remember in the 80s, the sneaker brand Jump, and then they used this song for the ad?
No.
Don't you?
No, but remember, I'm not a sneakerhead, so I wouldn't have known.
Yeah, listen, we weren't spoiled for sneakers then. We had Gypsies, North Stars, Jumps, and then LA Gears. And then the big brands started coming in. Oh, you know what? This one I can't even put into our, because it's Rick Astley. The opening line is, we're no strangers to love.
Oh, come on. We're going to Rickroll each other.
Ooh, but it does. They are Rickrolling here because listen to the options. I didn't see this. Never going to give you up. Red, red wine. Karma Chameleon or Straight out of Compton. They're getting cheeky.
They're getting cheeky. That's very
They're getting cheeky. So it's never going to give you up. We can't count that one. Okay. Dory, I wish you could see the image.
Is it Wham?
Oh, I wish you could see. It's not Wham. Okay. The lyric is, oh, the heads that turn make my back burn. Oh, the heads that turn make my back burn.
Not immediately ringing a bell. Okay.
Little Devil, Rain, oh, She Sells Sanctuary, or Fire Woman.
It's She Sells Sanctuary, isn't it?
It is She Sells Sanctuary down by the seashore. She Sells
Sanctuary by the seashore.
You got to see this photo of the cult. Ooh, next one. Another great photo of Boy George. The song options, Do You Really Want to Hurt Me, Victims, Karma Chameleon, or I'll Tumble For You. The line is, give me time to realize my crime.
Give me time.
There we go. Song interlude by Dory.
Do you really want to hurt me?
Yes, there we go.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay, we got Bruce Springsteen. Last two.
Okay.
For this week. Born down in a dead man's town. Born in the USA, I'm on fire. My hometown or Born to Run?
Born in the USA.
This is a ridiculously easy quiz. We're not even cheating at this point. And finally,
and I'm not Michael letting Jackson. Anyone else, if I can get it that quickly, everybody else has to get it that quickly. I'm not waiting for
anyone. No, these are very easy. Michael Jackson, song choices are Smooth Criminal, Thriller, Billie Jean, Beat It, and the lyric is, It's Close to Midnight.
Really?
Are you doubting?
No, I'm not doubting.
Oh, that's how easy it is. It is from Thriller. Listen, if you don't get, like, we don't expect people to get these straight away, but it is a very easy quiz. Do it for yourself, passfactory.com. I don't think we've put the link up because we're very proud of ourselves in this. We've been...
We'll put the link up when it's done. Yes. But if people find it on their own, then good for them. I mean, yeah, we've said it's called Guess the 80s Line by the First Line from PastFactory.com. It really is very easy to find.
Listen, and you want to talk about rabbit holes, PastFactory.com is a phenomenal website. It starts from the 30s, and you can find content from every decade. It's really, I mean, who puts stuff like this together? It's really top class stuff. People. Thank you.
For people but, who like us.
Yes. Thank you for helping us on that 80s show. Your favorite little space on the internet for the 1980s. Those of you on our Facebook page giving us follows. Thank you very much. We love it. We appreciate it. We love your listens. We're not going anywhere. I'm specifically not going to OMD in a few weeks' time. I just found out the news.
No.
Just before we started recording this. I'm very upset.
Be there for you in spirit.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm sailing on seven seas, so blue of my feelings and my emotions. So
go and watch the Don Johnson thing. It'll cheer you up.
Oh, book off an hour to watch Don Johnson. Heartbeats.
It'll be the best Dory, hour even of the year. Yes.
Besides this week and every hour that we put a show together for you, of course. So Dory, of course, very happy to hear about Bobcat Goldthwait opening for Nirvana. Still your favorite thing you learned in the show?
I mean, there were a few things, but it's still my favorite thing, yes.
So many things. Sometimes when I look at the show and I look back, our show notes, what have we been talking about? I go, did we really talk about all of that in an hour? And you get it.
No, we didn't even get to half of it.
No, I cut some things out. I've got a story. I have to tell you a story. Taylor Dane, she's selling her house. Not a great story, okay?
Okay.
Selling a house, it's nice. Pretty nondescript house. Nondescript rich person house. Fine. Okay? But I really want to say it because I want to title the section, Sell It to My Heart. Taylor Dane, selling a house. I'm keeping it. No? Doesn't work?
Can you hear the tumbleweed?
Okay. Thanks for joining me, Dory. Bye.